How you doing? It's Alonzo Bowden. Now, I love fantasy football, and when I decided to check out these new weekly leagues, I chose FanDuel.com, the leader in one-week fantasy football leagues for real money. That's right, for real money. You can win cash every week, immediate cash payouts. Set your new lineup every week. Relive the excitement of drafting a whole new team every week. Or just get rid of those players who ain't performing. You know, you got to draft new sometimes. There's no season-long commitment. There are no upfront fees. And contest entry fees start at just $1. FanDuel's paying out more than $400 million this year, but you have to play to win. So sign up and draft a team today. Listen, here's what you do. Go to FanDuel.com. Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use my name for your code, Bowden, B-O-D-D-E-N. And the first 50 people that sign up using code Bowden, they will get their first deposit matched dollar for dollar up to $200. It's up to $200 for free. FanDuel.com, where every week is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. That's FanDuel.com. Come on, you can spell it. Sign up today. Hi, this is Alonzo Bowden. Welcome to the latest episode of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? We're up to episode 83. I am in Cleveland, Ohio, and let's go. Hey, I want to start out with a quick shout out. Happy birthday to Rick Salto, a fan who hit me up on Twitter. And if you're out there and you're listening and you hit me up, I'll be happy to wish you a happy birthday too. Man, that's a lot of happy for one sentence, which is probably what we need right now. Listen, we know what the big topic is in the news. We're still all to the nation is still talking about Ferguson, Missouri and Michael Brown being shot. And I am not going to say I'm tired of it because I can't be tired of it. It's still a horrible situation, but it's just the same thing over and over again. And I do not want to turn into one of these pundits that rehashes the same facts. Thankfully, things seem to have cooled down some in Ferguson. There aren't the militarized police versus citizenry challenges, but I definitely want to talk about that in a minute. I have my own views on that and some experience with that because I have been in an MRAP, and wow, what a vehicle. But first, since I'm in Ohio, I want to, you know, call attention to another story that doesn't get the same attention, but it's the same old thing. I don't know if you've heard of John Crawford. John Crawford was a black man who had an air rifle, like a BB gun, in a Walmart, and they called the police, and the police shot him dead. Now, here's the thing. He had a BB gun in a Walmart where they sell the BB gun. It wasn't like he walked in carrying it or he was brandishing it, trying to rob the cashier or something like that. They sell it in the store, and he was carrying it in the store. And he was shot down by police. But you know what makes this even worse and what makes this even more ridiculous? And, you know, the people who say that I'm a racist, because whenever I complain about white cops shooting black people, there's a population, you're a racist. So here's my racist angle on this. Ohio is an open carry state, all right? Meaning that you can carry any weapon you want as long as it's in plain view in Ohio. You can carry your rifle, your shotgun, you can wear your handgun on your hip. I'm not going to go into how ridiculous I think these open carry laws and these open carry people are, but I am going to say that you can carry a gun, but this poor guy, John Crawford, was shot for having a BB gun in the store that sold it. Now, there are a couple of other stories that, you know, happened in Ohio. Of course, if you go online, you can see pictures of their, you know, they're always dressed in their little cute camo with their gun and their flag. And there's a mother hugging a child with a gun on her hip, which that's beautiful. That's great. But anyway, oh, by the way, there's a book on Amazon called My Parents Are Open Carry. And you really just have to click and look at that one and read some of the comments and reviews because they're absolutely hilarious. I may get to those later in the podcast for you. But right now, I just want to tell you that, you know, in 2012, and remember, Ohio's an open carry state. So in 2012, a white man enters a store openly carrying his weapon. The police confronted him. They confronted him. They didn't just shoot him dead. They actually talked to him. There were no weapons drawn, no commands to give up the gun, just a stern conversation. That'll teach you, a stern conversation. He was asked to provide identification. He refused. They arrested him and released him. Charges were dropped. This year, this was in 2012, he's suing the police department for $3.6 million. That's right, because he was inconvenienced. And there was a woman waiting at a bus stop to bring her child home from school. And she was approached by an officer who saw her weapon. Because why wouldn't you have a weapon at the bus stop when you're picking up your kid from school? The officer gave her advice and said he didn't want to dissuade her from carrying because he's an advocate for it. So I don't know. Did John Crawford not have enough of a gun? Was that his mistake? Perhaps if he'd had a shotgun or a nice Glock, you know, in plain view, they wouldn't have killed him. I don't know. You had that BB gun. You were a threat. But fortunately, it had nothing to do with race, which, listen, it's a joke. This absolutely has to do with race. USA Today did an article that there have been, basically the average is two black people a week are shot by the police. That seems to be the average number. And this has been over the past 7 years. And this isn't the full number because this database, it's a federal database, only works on the departments that report the shootings. So we don't know how many police departments don't report the shootings and on and on. Like I say, it's the same thing. Is there a solution? Yes, there is. LA's gotten better. You know, community-based policing, the police having a basic respect for people, police talking to community leaders, whether they come from the church or they come from civic organizations. And when I say community leaders, I don't mean Al Sharpton or anyone else jumping in to grab some press. I don't like Al Sharpton being involved in these protests because he's crossed the line in journalists. He works for MSNBC, and you can't be a journalist. You can't claim independence and be at the front of a protest march. So I think that Al Sharpton needs to pick a side. Either he's going to be a paid journalist at MSNBC, or he's going to be the protest leader, activist, organizer, etc., that he's always been. But I don't think you can be both. But my opinion, well, this whole damn podcast is my opinion. Oh, yeah. Anyway, so we have John Crawford, another example. We have so many black people being shot by the police, and it's, you know, it's like the joke. It's like the Obama thing, right? Anything Barack Obama says, the Republicans automatically vote no from day one. But it has nothing to do with his race. It's his policies. Let's get to these police departments and this unbelievable militarization of the police department. If you watched Ferguson, the protests on any day, you saw the police in full combat gear. I'm not talking riot gear. I'm not talking safety gear. They were wearing full combat gear. As a matter of fact, they're given body armor. And you know what the tragedy is with them being given body armor? I've done shows in Iraq. You know, the soldiers in Iraq had to buy their own body armor. Yeah, they have to pay for it. So if they didn't have, you know, the money to get it, or their family didn't have the money to get it, then they got this cheap crap body armor. But the good stuff, the stuff that every soldier should have, they have to pay for. And that's a damn shame. And the first time I went to Iraq in 2009, they took us out in these MRAPs, okay, which are the military transports that are built to withstand IEDs. You understand? These are military vehicles built to withstand explosives, landmines, et cetera, et cetera. These things are huge. And you want to talk about intimidating? It was an operation to drive us around in these things. It was a planned military operation to take us comics to do our shows around Iraq and these things. These things were so big that on some side streets, they couldn't go down the street because they would literally tear down the power wires above the streets and maybe break up, well, whatever they ran over, they would break up. In other words, these are military vehicles. These are not police vehicles. I read a quote, and I wish I had written down who it was so I could attribute it. I'm going to tell you, paraphrase this, and I wish I'd thought of it, but it's true. The military, the U.S. military, any military, is designed for enemies of the state. The police are designed to protect the people. That's their purpose. When the military, when the police starts using military equipment, then they make the enemy of the state the people. Okay, military for enemy of the state, police to protect the people. Give the police military gear, that the enemy of the state becomes the people. And that's what we're looking at. That's what we're looking at. Now, right now, SWAT teams all across the country, it's called the National Tactical Officers Association, they're lobbying Congress to not take away their toys. They don't want Congress to take away all these military weapons, okay? Now, this is the part that's really fascinating to me. Rand Paul, Republican Senator Rand Paul, is considering introducing a bill that would prohibit all transfers of weapons from military to law enforcement officials, establishing kind of a church-state boundary that couldn't be crossed. That's really interesting because Rand Paul doesn't respect the actual church-state boundary, but he wants to create the same boundary between military and police. I'm suspicious of Rand Paul. You know why? Because when Cliven Bundy, you remember the rancher in Nevada, when he literally had an armed militia pointing weapons at government officials, Rand Paul initially supported Cliven Bundy. So then of course, when it was proven Cliven Bundy was nuts and a racist, Rand Paul ran away. But still, initially, he supported this guy. Now, what I didn't see when Cliven Bundy set up his militia and his assault-type weapons, and he had that great strategy also used by Hamas and various terrorist organizations, I'm going to put the women and children out front so if the government starts shooting, they kill them first, because he's so brave. But I didn't see MRAPs, you know, in Nevada. I didn't see armored personnel carriers. I didn't see police in full combat gear. They wear camouflage in Ferguson. Why? Why are they wearing camouflage on city streets? Hey, we can see you. You know, camouflage in the city is undercover. But you wear, like, in other words, if you want to be urban camouflage, dress like normal people. Don't wear camouflage and body armor and assault weapons and gas masks and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then say, hey, these people are spoiling for a fight. You come in like an attacking force, you scare people. They throw a water bottle and you pull out, you roll up in an MRAP. What are you kidding me? So needless to say, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. There's no need for MRAPs or military assault vehicles on city streets. You know, the police are like, we have to stay one step ahead of the criminal element. Yeah, ooh, I'd say you're one step ahead of them. You're one step ahead of most military operations throughout the world. Forget about street criminals, but we've lost our minds. I just file it under the category of sadly, we as a society have lost our minds. We've allowed fear and paranoia to supersede any common sense. We don't talk to one another. We just demonize a group that's different. And these police departments have decided that the people are so evil and so dangerous that they need full-scale military assault weapons to monitor a protest march. So that's basically what they're doing, monitoring a protest march with the occasional arrest of reporters who, you know, they don't like. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable we have reached this point. But then again, maybe it's not. Okay, so I'm going to move on. I can talk about this on and on and on, and it's the same thing. But let's look at some other stuff going on in the news that you may or may not have heard about, that you may or may not have seen. And don't think there's other ridiculous not going on, okay? You know, one of my favorite groups, the Tea Party. You know, I love the Tea Party, and the Tea Party talks about fiscal responsibility and financial responsibility, and you liberals with your spend, and Barack Obama throwing away the money. We will shut down the government to balance this budget, blah, 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 blah. Well, let's take a little look at what the Tea Party's doing with all their contributions. The Tea Party obviously collects a lot of money. I mean, you know, you elect a black president and the Tea Party starts cashing in. So they did a study of what some of the big Tea Party groups have been doing with the money and where the money's been going. And it's been going to a lot of places, but not to Tea Party candidates. The Tea Party Patriots, we've all heard of them. They're one of the biggest, if not the biggest, Tea Party organization. Last year, they took in about $10.5 million. Actually, $10.6 million is what they collected last year. Oddly, their expenses were $9.2 million, and only $1.1 million went to candidates. So 90% went to expenses, which is things like their salaries and their travel and their hotels and their junkets and their, I guess tea is really expensive. You know, those three corner hats can't be cheap, I guess. I don't know. But whatever they're spending it on, they are not spending it on the candidates that people are donating the money to. So, and okay, let's go. You knew I was going to go to Sarah Palin. You know I love Sarah. How'd Sarah do? Unfortunately, Sarah's even more expensive than Tea Party Patriots. Apparently, those designer clothes ain't cheap, because Sarah's PAC took in $2 million and they paid out $106,000. That's right. So 95% of the $2 million they took in went to expenses, but 5% went to the candidates. And the 5% was just doled out in $5,000 cash contributions to candidates. You know how that's the limit, right? If you're a private citizen, you can only give $5,000 per candidate. That's what Sarah's group did. Just picked a group of guys and said, hey, it's $5,000. We got expenses over here. You think it's easy? Think it's cheap to look as good as Sarah does? You got hair getting done. You got designer clothes. You got expensive tea. So to those who think the Tea Party is a financially responsible organization and who somehow think that if they ran the government, things would be better, take another look at this. Okay, take in $2 million, spend $100,000. That's a pack. That's contributions. That's helping those candidates. That's making America great. That's bullshit is what it is. Rick Perry quickly becoming one of my favorites. You know why? It's the glasses. I love Rick in the glasses because Rick looks serious. Whenever he has the glasses on, he just has that. You know, that was his strategy. I'm going to wear glasses and look more intelligent. So Rick was indicted. Have you heard about this? He was indicted for threatening to veto funding for a unit that investigates corruption unless a top Democrat resigned. Okay, so basically, Rick runs everything in Texas. Okay, Rick has been governor for 14 years, and you know he's got everybody's in line, the legislature and the various government departments, except one. There's the Public Integrity Unit, and this unit investigates corruption of public officials. So he wanted to veto their funding, and he's been indicted because that's an abuse of power. In other words, you can't have an independent entity that's there to investigate public corruption and threaten them. That's abusing your power as governor. Now, the best thing, and this is my favorite thing, Ricks has bipartisan support. That's right. Republicans and Democrats are supporting Rick on this indictment. Why? Because this is an independent organization that investigates both sides. So they can't agree on anything, okay? They cannot agree on health care. They can't agree on education. They can't agree on the border. They can't agree on, you name it, the Republicans and Democrats can't agree on anything except they do not want to be investigated by an independent board on corruption. I'm sorry for laughing, but it's so obvious it's ridiculous. So Rick is facing 100 years in jail, and we know that's not going to happen. I don't know what is going to happen, but he's got his glasses on, and he's looking stern. So this is obviously a grown-up situation. Could get in the way of him being president in 2016. The whole indictment investigation thing before you become president, I don't know, Rick. Maybe you could have the Tea Party spend money to finance an investigation because they'd only spend like $80 on something like this. So good luck on this one, Mr. Perry, and your glasses look fantastic. Speaking of corruption, most of us have seen these red light cameras and we've had our suspicions. Now, in California, in L.A. and San Diego, they've been taken down because they were challenged in the courts and it was proven that they were only there to make money. That was the only purpose of them. It had nothing to do with safety. It had nothing to do with traffic flow. It had to do with collecting these ridiculous fines. At one point, red light camera tickets in L.A. were $400. And what they did was they decreased the time of the yellow light to make it more likely you'd be running a red light. You see, that was a scam, and it was proven, and they made them take all the cameras down. Well, that was L.A. Chicago, they haven't done that yet. I think Chicago still has the cameras, but there has been a federal indictment. A federal grand jury returned a 23-count indictment against Karen Finley. Karen Finley was the CEO of Redflix, which is a company that makes the cameras. And she doled out a little over $500,000, about $570,000 in cash and prizes to a guy named John Bills, who's in the Chicago government, to get about $124 million in contracts. Now, here's an interesting side note, and I love this about Karen Finley. You know where she lives? She lives in Cave Creek, Arizona. You know where that is? That's a rich suburb of Phoenix, where DMX also happens to live. You remember when DMX got arrested for boarding the dogs and dog fighting and blah, 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 blah. So what this means is that it doesn't matter whether you have white-collar crime or whether you have white-collar crime, which is Karen's, or thug crime, which is DMX, they get along. They live together. Who says we can't live together? Go to Cave Creek, Arizona, and you have your white-collar criminals living right next to your thugs, all right? It's a beautiful thing. It's America. We can make it. So anyway, she's under indictment for bribing city officials. There's also, things that have to do with the red light cameras, how at certain times these cameras seem to give out more tickets. You know, it was kind of interesting because this company, Redflix, they also make money off of the processing of the fines. Like, it's like a percentage. They get a share of the take. So they're in it to give more tickets, not just to set up the cameras, but to give more tickets, et cetera, et cetera. So they've indicted Finley. They've indicted some John Bills and other Chicago officials. My point being that, no, you're not paranoid. You're not paranoid. The red light cameras are there to give you more tickets, and it's a setup. Okay? Speaking of white-collar crime and the beauty of corruption, here's a story you might like. The highest paid CEO in the United States, and you get extra points if you can guess how much he makes. Okay, time's up. Last year, he made $142 million. His name is Sharif Souki, S-O-U-K-I, and if I'm pronouncing it wrong, Sharif, I'm sorry. But he made $142 million last year, and that's $50 million more than the second place earner, who they don't even name because you got trounced. Now, here's the beauty of it. He runs a company that's called Cherney Energy. And Cherney Energy, what they do is They're expected to be an industry leader in the process of taking hydraulically fracked natural gas and liquefying it for export. Yeah, you've probably heard about fracking. That's where they crack the earth and they get the natural gas out. His company is going to liquefy the gas and send it to export. And I say going to because they haven't yet. The company hasn't done a thing. The company stock has gone up 1,800% since 2008, and the company has yet to turn a profit. He made $142 million. They've yet to make a buck. This is beautiful. So the next time your boss says, man, you are laying around not doing a thing, you tell him you are training to be a highly paid CEO. Your purpose is to be there and not do anything and make sure the company doesn't make any money so that you can be higher paid as a CEO. God bless America. I love this country. Stay in school, kids. You too can make $142 million for nothing. The shareholders of the company are going to sue to adjust his compensation, and maybe they will. So he might get cut back to only like $100 million. For not making any profit, and they get mad at LeBron for making $20 million and not bringing home a championship. Hey, at least they make money off of those LeBron t-shirts and jerseys. And which ones do you have, Miami or Cleveland? Better get both. Never know which one's going to be worth money at the end of his career. Let's talk about a super popular, so popular that it is now reviled custom, the Ice Bucket Challenge. In case you've been living under a rock or perhaps had your head in a bucket, sorry, that was a cheap pun. I'm better than that. I shouldn't do it. But anyway, what they do is people challenge you to dump a bucket of ice over your ice water over your head, and either you take the challenge and do it or you donate money to ALS. This has been going on for about a month. ALS, more commonly known as Lou Gehrig's disease, has made over $50 million in donations because of the awareness of it. Everybody's doing it, people, celebrities, athletes, etc. I haven't done it yet. I probably will. I'm sure I've been challenged. I just haven't heard it yet. I got to go on Facebook because that's my new reality. By the way, I just go to Facebook, and if it's not there, it didn't really happen. But anyway, the backlash on this, people are saying, well, there's water shortages. There are droughts in Africa, and we're wasting money, wasting water, dumping ice buckets over our head. Listen, people, take it down a notch. Relax. I'm not absolutely sure, but I'm pretty confident we waste more water running the faucet while we brush our teeth or shave than we do dumping ice buckets over our head. So it's fun, it's funny, there have been some great videos of it, and it's raised $50 million for a charity. Now, some people even knock the charity. They say only 3,000 people a year get ALS. Is it really? Really? Are we that bad that, not enough people die from your disease, so we don't want to help your charity? Come on. Man, have we gotten that cynical and horrible? And listen, our criminals can get along. Why can't we? Huh? If the white-collar criminals and the thugs can work together to make Cave Creek, Arizona, a better and yet somehow more dangerous place, why can't we get along and help the charity? Listen, if you don't support it, if you're not happy about dumping a bucket of ice water over your head, then don't do it. Then don't look at the videos of people doing it. Then don't contribute to the charity. But why would you knock it? Comparing that to the fact that there's a drought in Africa or people are starving somewhere else, that's the same ridiculous comparison to where, for instance, Michael Brown is shot by a cop and people are like, well, there's black-on-black crime. So? That one has nothing to do with the other. You see, it's just this ridiculous comparison. One has, and now I'm going to get in trouble for comparing a charity giving to guys being shot by the police. So I'm only digging the hole deeper. But I'm okay with the Ice Bucket Challenge. It's not a horrible thing. If you don't like it, then just don't do it. Now, let's move on. We got a couple other things before I wrap this up. In sports, you've heard of Johnny Football. Johnny Manziel, the quarterback out of Texas A&M, spent the summer in Vegas partying, having a good time. went to training camp. Turns out maybe Johnny Football should have spent a little time being Johnny Playbook, because he found out in the NFL, those defenses come at you fast and things change all the time and you got to adjust on a run and you got to know what's going to happen. And Johnny knows none of the above. So Johnny will start the season on the bench, and he's still being a punk. When they played against the Washington Redskins, he flipped the finger at the Washington Redskins defense. Just going to give you a little advice here, Johnny. If you're going to flip off someone on a professional football team, make it the kicker. Just saying. Not saying kickers are weak, but your odds are better taking on a kicker than a lineman or a linebacker. Speaking of linebackers, it looks like Michael Sams will make it with the Rams. His only thing in his way is he's playing for a team that has such a great defense and so many great rushers that it's hard to crack the lineup. But Michael Sams, the gay football player, came out of college, wasn't going to be drafted, blah, 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 blah. Turns out he's a good football player. And in the preseason, he's had 3 sacks and he's had 4 quarterback hits, which is very good coming from his position. And one of the most beautiful sacks happened last night when he sacked Johnny Manziel. That's right. He got Johnny Football, and he did that, rub the fingers together, show the money thing, because some clown on Twitter said that if you sack Johnny Manziel and do the money symbol, he will buy drinks for everybody forever. Then Michael Sams actually did it, and Twitter boy kind of backed off and said he'll give some money to charity. So maybe he should do an ice bucket challenge, but let's heat up the water. That'd be great. There's a new challenge. How about the boiling water ice bucket challenge? That'd be fun to watch. Finally, and kids, some of you might be too young to even know about this, but seems everything that's old is new again. You ever hear that? Everything that's old is new again? Suge Knight was shot at an L.A. nightclub. Now, here's the thing, and please don't play this for Suge, because I don't need him shooting me. Suge Knight was a music producer who was involved in all of the 90s East-West rap feuds, you know, with Tupac and Biggie and on and on and on. He worked with N.W.A. and Ice Cube and Dr. Dre and, you know, just basically that whole gangster rap thug life atmosphere was a big part of Suge Knight. Suge Knight was a big part of that, you know, with Death Row Records, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, last night at the One Oak Nightclub on Sunset in West Hollywood, Suge got shot. It's 1997 again. They shooting Suge Knight. Which here's the lesson, ladies and gentlemen. If you in the house and you hear Suge Knight's in the house, you get your ass out the house. That's all. Just leave. Just go. You don't want to be there when Suge's there, because he's hanging on to the East-West rap feud. Who the hell knows why? Just don't be there. There's certain places you don't want to be, okay? You don't want to be in front of an MRAP operated by the police, because it's a military vehicle, not a police vehicle. You don't want to be in Cave Creek, Arizona, because who knows what the hell's going on there with CEOs and thugs challenging each other for crime. And you don't want to be in any club where Suge Knight is partying the night away. All right? That's my advice for the week. This is Alonzo Bowden thanking you for listening to the podcast. Next week, I'm going to be at a great club. It's called Tommy T's in Pleasanton, California, just outside of Oakland. Don't worry, it's south of the Napa earthquake. There was a bad earthquake at a 6.1, but fortunately there wasn't too much damage or too many people lost or hurt. But it's not going to be that close, so don't be scared. Come up and see me, and let's laugh. And the pilot is being delayed, but it's still going to be done. I promise you I'm going to be doing a pilot for HLN. You'll hear more about it as it gets closer, all right? Thank you, guys. I love you. Keep laughing.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, slicing drive. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.